to be with you all, devotees, here at ISKCON Centen, or ISKCON Parkmore. So we're going to talk a little bit about reincarnation, and I thought we would read, normally we read from Bhagavad Gita, and all these things are there in Bhagavad Gita, but I thought tonight we could read a little from Srimad Bhagavatam. There's some very nice verses there. Narada Muni, speaking to King Prachina Barhishat, and Narada Muni describes some of the some interesting principles about reincarnation. So we're going to read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 29, talks between Narada and King Prachina Barhishat, starting with text 63. And we'll read about 3 or 4 verses or so. Yatanu miyate chitam ubayayar indriye hitai evam prag dehajam karma lakshyate chitavritti bi. One can understand the mental or conscious position of a living entity by the activities of 2 kinds of senses, the knowledge-acquiring senses and the executive senses. Similarly, by the mental condition or consciousness of a person, one can understand his position in the previous life. Interesting. How we can understand person's previous life, their position previously. And as we'll see in these verses that we're going to read, next few verses, also we can understand, if we observe carefully enough and analyze, then we can also understand what the next life will be. Yeah. Different symptoms are there. So then text 64. Nanubhutam kvachanena Dehina drishtam ashrutam kadachid upalabhyeta yadrupam yadrig atmani. Sometimes we suddenly experience something that was never experienced in the present body by sight or hearing. Sometimes we see such things suddenly in dreams. And text 65. Tenasya tadrisham rajal lingino deha sambhavam shradats vananubhutarto namanas prashtum arhati. Therefore, my dear king, the living entity who has a subtle mental covering develops all kinds of thoughts and images because of his previous body. Take this from me as certain. There is no possibility of concocting anything mentally without having perceived it in the previous body. And text 66. Mana eva manushyasya purva rupani shamsati bhavishyatash chabadramte tataivana bhavishyata. O King, all good fortune unto you. The mind is the cause of the living entities attaining a certain type of body in accordance with his association with material nature. According to one's mental composition, one can understand what the living entity was in his past life, as well as what kind of body he will have in the future. Thus, the mind indicates the past and future bodies. And text 67. We'll read 67 and 68 also. Adrishtam ashrutam chatra kvachin manasi drishyate yata tatanu mantavyam deshakala kriyashrayam. Sometimes in a dream we see something never experienced or heard of in this life. But all these incidents have been experienced at different times, in different places, and in different conditions. Sarve kraman urodena manasindriya gochara ayanti bahusho yanti sarve samanaso jana. The mind of the living entity continues to exist in various gross bodies, and according to one's desires for sense gratification, the mind records different thoughts. In the mind, these appear together in different combinations. Therefore, these images sometimes appear as things never seen or never heard before. So these are some verses then, spoken by Narada Muni in this 29th chapter of the 4th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, to do with the process of reincarnation and establishing some of the important principles involved in reincarnation. Let us just see, I'll read one of the purports by Srila Prabhupada. Read the purport to text 64. Actually, could I have a little water, please? Thanks. So text 64, the verse itself is, sometimes we suddenly experience something that was never experienced in the present body by sight or hearing. Sometimes we see such things suddenly in dreams. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In dreams, we sometimes see things that we have never experienced in the present body. Sometimes in dreams, we think that we are flying in the sky, although we have no experience of flying. This means that once, in a previous life, either as a demigod or astronaut, we flew in the sky. The impression is there in the stockpile of the mind, and it suddenly expresses itself. It is like fermentation taking place in the depths of water, which sometimes manifests itself in bubbles on the water's surface. Sometimes we dream of coming to a place we have never known or experienced in this lifetime. But this is proof that in a past life, we experience this. The impression is kept within the mind and sometimes becomes manifest either in dream or in thought. The conclusion is that the mind is the storehouse of various thoughts and experiences undergone during our past lives. Thus, there is a chain of continuation from one life to another, from previous lives to this life, and from this life to future lives. This is also sometimes proved by saying that a man is a born poet, a born scientist, or a born devotee. If, like Maharaj Ambarish, we think of Krishna constantly in this life, Savai Mana Krishna Padara Vindayo, we will certainly be transferred to the kingdom of God at the time of death. Even if our attempt to be Krishna conscious is not complete, our Krishna consciousness will continue in the next life. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita chapter 6, verse 41. Prapya punya kritam lokan ushitva shashvati sama shuchinam srimatam gehe yoga brashto vijayate. The successful yogi, after many, many years of enjoyment on the planets of the pious living entities, is born into a family of righteous people or into a family of rich aristocracy. If we rigidly follow the principles of meditation on Krishna, there is no doubt that in our next life we will be transferred to Krishna Loka, Goloka Vrindavan. Nanubhutam kochanena dehina drishtam achrutam kadachid upalabhyeta yadrupam yadrig atmani. Sometimes we suddenly experience something that was never experienced in the present body by sight or hearing. Sometimes we see such things suddenly in dreams. Om Yanata Randasya Gyananjana Shalakya Chakshurmilitam Yanatasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chitanimano Vishnam Stapitam Yanabhutale Swayam Rupikadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vanchakapa Trilubhyastha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Paditanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Brahmanityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasudhi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So these are some very interesting verses spoken by Narada Muni, discussing, establishing some of the basic principles of reincarnation and giving some evidence of that. And this is very interesting evidence that actually the main theme really which was drawn out in a number of these verses we read is that sometimes things pop into our minds, either when we're awake or even sometimes while we're sleeping in the form of dreams, things we've never been exposed to before. Things we've never been exposed to before in this lifetime, but sometimes these things come to us very vividly. In fact, even in day-to-day material life, there is a phenomenon which is called déjà vu. Yeah, déjà vu. Déjà, this is French phrase. Déjà means already, and vu means seen. Already seen. Déjà vu. So, someone gets that, some intuition. They're in some situation, and suddenly there's some intuition. Oh, I'm familiar with this situation. Even though they may never have been in that situation in that lifetime. I had a very vivid experience of this when I arrived in London, December 1972, and my brother was driving me through the streets of London, and I'd never been to London. Of course, I'd seen, you know, on television and in books a little bit, but I'd certainly never been in London. But as we were driving through, I had this vivid, and it was just ongoing, like for at least half an hour, very vivid feeling that I've seen this, I've been here, and a sense of familiarity. Something a little intangible, of course, because we haven't had experience in this lifetime. So it may not be totally clear, but intuitively some feeling is there, and it's really very compelling type of feeling. Yes. So actually, and in the purport here that we've read by Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada makes mention of some other things, and in the verses some other evidences for previous lives are mentioned also. Prabhupada mentions that some people, they become known as born scientists, a born poet, a born musician. Yes. I forget who it was. Was it Mozart or Handel or Beethoven? It was one of those very, very big, one of the very biggest classical names in music. When he was, I think, 5 or so, he wrote some complex symphony, isn't it? Yes, I remember learning about that in school. Yeah. Who was it? Was it Mozart? Okay. So 5 years old or 4 years old or something, you know, five. You know, at the age of 5, you know, there's no question of doing anything of any sort of complexity or depth. There's basically no question of that at all. And people take it to be a gift, some like a gift from God or just some genetic quirk or something like that perhaps. But how would it be that? How could it be that? This is something coming from previous lifetime. This is something coming, stored there within the consciousness from previous lifetime. And it's becoming released in this lifetime. There are many examples like this. In Srimad Bhagavatam itself, we read of two examples. We read of a number of examples, but two come to mind. And they're quite contrary to each other. One is the example of Shishupal, who was a demon. And Shishupal, he was born in the same family as Krishna. This is now 5,000 years ago, right at the time Krishna appeared. In fact, Krishna's birthday and Shishupal's birthday were practically on the same day. They were more or less exactly the same age. And they were related, like slightly distant cousins, something of that sort. So, being related, then the news came to each family that the other family, there had just been a birth. Within a day, couple of days of the children having been born. So the news naturally was moving around in the families. So each family heard that such and such, I don't know what the parents of Shishupal, what their name was, but what their names were, but such and such, they gave birth to a child. They've named the child Shishupal. And Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, or Devaki and Vasudev, they've also given birth to a child who they've named Krishna. And when this was told about Krishna, when this was told in the family of Shishupal, and this was told in the presence of little baby Shishupal, 2 or 3 days old, yes. This is a very clear-cut case of not having had the opportunity to develop a certain attitude yet, or type of consciousness yet. But when Shishupal heard that the visiting family members were telling his parents that, oh, you know that our relatives, they've also had a child, and his name is Krishna. So Shishupal, perhaps in his mother's arms, perhaps in his cot or something, when Shishupal, 2 or 3 day old Shishupal, heard the name Krishna, what did he do? He screamed. He screamed and screamed for days. They couldn't stop him. He was in a state, like sometimes a person, or particularly a child, if there's really something extremely dramatic which happens, then they become so overwhelmed that they just lose control of themselves, and they end up just kind of heaving and crying and rolling and falling, and they just, they're elsewhere altogether. So Shishupal was like this for a few days, and his parents were trying everything. Pat him on the back, tell him it's all right, bounce him up and down, all the tactics that parents use. Nothing helped. He just screamed and screamed and screamed and screamed and screamed for days. Yes, he couldn't scream anymore, but he was just, it was just, anyway, it was like that. It was really a very vivid thing. So then, actually, in the Bhagavatam, in the 7th canto, if you read the first chapter of the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it explains a bit about this. Maharaj Yudhisthira, this is, at that particular point in the Bhagavatam, Krishna has just killed Shishupal. Right there in the first chapter of the 7th canto. And when that happens, there are many people around, and everyone sees that as Shishupal's body falls down dead, the soul, everyone sees this like little effulgent thing coming out and hovering around. They see the soul with their own eyes and then traveling towards Krishna. and then entering into the feet of Krishna. Everyone saw that. So that's described there in the first chapter of the seventh canto. And when that happened, everyone was amazed. And particularly Maharaj Yudhisthira, he was extremely amazed. So as it happened, Narada Muni, the same Narada Muni, was standing right next to him. So they have a discussion then in that first chapter of the seventh canto. Maharaj Yudhisthira is asking Narada Muni, how on earth did this happen? And he says that this Shishupal was such a demon, he was so anti-Krishna, that even as an infant, in the broken language of a child, just like, you know, parents, they have their ears tuned for the first words of the child, and, you know, even some broken language, and then they pick up, right, you know, now the child, something is coming in the way of speaking. So when Shishupal was speaking like that, in the broken language of an infant, all he would talk about was Krishna. Shishupal is an interesting example. He was Krishna conscious. He never forgot Krishna his entire life. Yes. He never forgot Krishna. He never talked of anything at all except Krishna. Nothing. He never talked about how you are, how's your family, and what's happening. Never, ever he spoke about that. He only spoke about Krishna. But the problem was, he only spoke about Krishna in a negative way. We've told this story before, I'm sure you've heard it. Someone might ask him, how are you today? You know, some just informal chit-chat. And he would say, today I hate Krishna. Today I feel like killing Krishna. That was how he felt today. Today I feel like killing Krishna. What have you been doing today? Today I've been thinking about killing Krishna. Something like that. Anyway, like this. This was Shishupal. So Maharaj Yudhisthira asked Narada Muni, how is it possible? We have just seen with our own eyes that he merged into the body of Krishna. That means that he got liberation. But he was such a demon. Everyone knew that. Yeah. So, anyway, even in the broken language of a child, he would only talk about Krishna. So he never had the opportunity to learn about Krishna. Hare Krishna. Have a seat. He never had the opportunity to learn about Krishna. But even from that point, he had an attitude towards Krishna. He really had an attitude. Then, second example we'll give from Srimad Bhagavatam, and fortunately it's on the positive side, is the example of Maharaj Parikshit. Yeah. Maharaj Parikshit, he was exactly the opposite. As an infant, as a child, he couldn't talk. Same idea. Couldn't talk. Couldn't walk. And people would come along and, you know, want to play with the baby as people are prone to do, you know, pick the baby up and sort of play around with the child. He wasn't interested. Yeah. Yeah, all this sort of baby talk that adults get into. He wasn't interested. He didn't respond. But as soon as they would start talking about Krishna, he would become transfixed. As an infant. As soon as there was some kirtan, some chanting Hare Krishna, something like that, he was completely transfixed. Even as an infant, and as a preschool child, 3-4 years old perhaps, something like that, then his friends and other little children who were around, they would say, come, let's play hide and seek, or, you know, this and that. Let's play together. He didn't want to know. He didn't want to know. What he would do, he had a set of deities, Radhakrishna deities, and he would just dress them and worship them all day. You know, his parents would leave him at 2 in the afternoon and come back at 6 in the evening. He was still doing it. They would call him, come and eat. He wouldn't come. He would just be absorbed in deity worship. Sometimes they'd wonder where he was. He was living in the palace because he was a member of the royal family. And they had a temple within the palace. Very beautiful, beautiful temple. So they had a temple in the palace. And if he wasn't dressing his deities, his parents would come to find him, but he wasn't there. Then where would he be? He'd be in the temple. So they'd go there, and he'd just be sitting there, looking at the deities in the temple, listening to the people, taking part in kirtan, as an infant. So this is coming from previous life. This is, and these symptoms of those tendencies were showing themselves very clearly before, either in the case of Shishupal or Maharaj Parikshit, before they had the opportunity to learn these things in this lifetime. Yes. So where's it coming from? It's coming from the previous lifetime. Yes. In fact, this is a big, this subject of, how do certain impressions appear to be formed within the mind already, before there's been opportunity for them to form in this lifetime. This and related things like to do with reincarnation. These are very perplexing questions in religious circles. Religious circles which don't accept reincarnation. And one of the well-known sort of manifest features of that is the debate about why do different things happen to people? How is it that different things happen to people? Things which seem to be not in keeping with their natures. Like, there was one Jewish rabbi, he wrote a book which he titled, Why Do Bad Things Happen to Good People? This was several years ago, but it was a best-selling book. It was a very popular book, Why Do Bad Things Happen to Good People? It was written by a Jewish rabbi. Ironically, his name was Hari Krishna, which is almost Hari Krishna. Maybe that was from a previous life. Yes, Rabbi Hari Krishna. He wrote this book, Why Do Bad Things Happen to Good People? Because it's a very perplexing question. If you think there's only one lifetime. Yes. Because, particularly in religious circles, it's a very perplexing question. If you're not religious and you just take it that it's all just a matter of chance, something like that, Darwinian type of idea, evolutionary type of idea, and there's no real intelligence behind what's going on in our daily lives. So if you take it like that, then it's not a problem. Bad things can happen to good people, good things can happen to bad people. It's not really a problem in principle. But if you are religious, if you accept there is a God, then it's an extremely serious problem, actually. Why should bad things happen to good people? And why should good things happen to bad people? These things are going on. These things are going on, actually. This is a simple reality. I was reminded of this today. We were driving around. Sharad and I were driving around in Lanesia, south in Lanesia, and for a while this afternoon. And there were on some public rubbish bins, which was also, I thought, quite ironic, on some of the public rubbish bins, like in the shopping centers and like that, there were these advertisements, safe abortions, performed by, I forget the exact wording, but it was along the lines of, performed by highly qualified medical staff, such and such, you know, phone this number. They were on the rubbish bins. But do bad things happen to good people? You know, a child within the womb of the mother has not had the opportunity yet to do anything good or bad. They haven't had the opportunity to earn anything. If there's just this one lifetime only, they haven't had the opportunity. So, if there's a God, but these things are happening, and they're happening, then this is a very serious problem. This is a good question. Why do bad things happen to good people? So Rabbi Kirshner, he tried to analyze this question. And the way he analyzed, at least the way he suggested, was that in the beginning, God was in control. He created everything nicely. And of course, God is very nice. He's benevolent. He's not a nasty person who would let bad things happen to good people. He's two things, mainly. One is he's competent. He was competent. The other is he's nice. Yeah. So he's in control and he is affectionate. So according to Rabbi Hari Krishna, in the meantime, that was at the beginning, but in the meantime, before 1998 came, God lost control. Not completely, but to some extent, God lost control. So even though he is affectionate and compassionate and nice, but unfortunately, sometimes, and it appears to be becoming more frequent, sometimes he's not able to manage things properly. So bad things happen to good people, or good things happen to bad people, and he's not able to deal with it. This was Rabbi Hari Krishna's serious suggestion in terms of there only being one lifetime. Yeah. Now, of course, because there are two sort of factors that he's trying to balance out. God's competence, his technical ability to deal with things, and his niceness, his character. You know, the other alternative would be that he is competent, but he's become nasty. Yes, his character has deteriorated. So therefore, even though he could stop it if he wanted, but he lets bad things happen to good people because he doesn't care. Yeah, so that's the other alternative. And Rabbi Hari Krishna also considered that one, but he just felt it wasn't, you know, his speculation was that we would rather have a nice God who's incompetent than a competent God who's not nice. Yes, but without this factor of reincarnation, if you accept there's a God, our hypothesis is, and you can think about it, and you know, if you feel you have a good answer, then we wouldn't mind hearing from you, because no one's come up with a good suggestion so far. How you could argue that God is nice and competent, plus there's no reincarnation. There's no reincarnation. There's only this life, full stop. So if you can figure out a good explanation why bad things can happen to good people or good things could happen to bad people with these three factors in place, no reincarnation, a nice God who is completely expert, then you let us know. Actually, I don't think you can. I don't think it's possible. I don't think it's possible. So, reincarnation then, our subject tonight is reincarnation, fact or fantasy. You know, what would it take What would constitute proof of that? Fact or fantasy? What would constitute, you know, such a thing like solid enough that we would all be forced to say, yes, well, yes, what can we say? It must be. We have no alternative. Well, it may be a little difficult. It may be a little difficult. In certain terms, but in certain other terms which we feel are reasonable, there are certain symptoms and factors in the whole situation which tend to indicate reincarnation very, very strongly. Yeah. Srila Prabhupada made the point that even materially, there are many things which we cannot see, but because there are symptoms of them, we accept them as existing. Srila Prabhupada gave the example of the wind. Have any of you ever seen the wind? I don't think so. No. But do any of you think there is no wind? No. Because we can understand the presence of wind by certain symptoms. The trees are moving, the grass is moving, and so on. You can feel it also. There's certain symptoms. Have any of you ever seen the substance called intelligence? Have you ever seen intelligence? Give us a kilo of intelligence. It seems to be in short supply these days. Yes. We, actually, Sharad and I, what an experience. We went to the Lanesia Southeast, I think it is, municipal offices to make some inquiries about land. And these people are so confused. Not only could they not tell us what land was available, they couldn't tell us who we should ask. And I don't mean which person. They couldn't tell us whether we should ask the government, meaning the government of the country, or the city council, or, you know, a particular department. They actually didn't know, because the whole system is so messed up. We had this experience today. It's like senior official, right? Pretty senior. In a big office, you know, obviously an important man, loads of papers all over the place. Didn't know. He didn't know. Yeah, so there's a shortage of intelligence. Now, none of us have seen intelligence. You know, like, here's a flower. You can see a flower. None of us have seen intelligence. But, at the same time, none of us think that there is no such thing as intelligence, because we see symptoms of intelligence. And when we see, like our experience today, we saw symptoms of a lack of intelligence, then we noticed that it, you know, it was like, what's the saying? It was something or other by its absence, prominent by its absence, or something like that. What's the saying? Conspicuous, exactly. It was conspicuous by its absence, really. Actually, it was quite a shocking experience. No wonder our country... In fact, I was thinking that we're lucky our country is only in, you know, a mess to the state that it is. At this rate, and it may come, you know, it may all manifest later, it should be in a greater mess. Yeah. So... intelligence sometimes is conspicuous by its absence. Intelligence is not something you can pull out of your pocket and display, or, you know, take a photograph or paint a picture of it and put it on the wall. But everyone accepts that intelligence exists. Why? Because there's certain symptoms. People act in logical fashions. Yeah. There are different systems in place which create orderly arrangements and so on. So similarly, we would say that even though we haven't seen reincarnation exactly, But there are certain symptoms, there are certain logical aspects to life which point to that extremely strongly. And if you take it out, if you take the possibility of reincarnation out, you get left with a situation which is very hard to make sense of. Like, why do bad things happen to good people? Unless you say that it's all just happening by chance and that there's no God. But there are many problems with that. It may be convenient to some people, but there are many problems with that. Just chance, just luck. Like, anyway, a nice painting. Like the paintings in our books. Some of them are very, very nice. They're all very nice. Some of them are very exceptional. And they're paintings of people. Or people in natural situations and so on and so forth. So, if any one of us, if I, for example, was asked to paint such a painting of some human beings, you know, very accurately and very nicely, reflecting, you know, certain moods and so on and so forth. If I was asked to do that, I couldn't do it. I have a confession. I was useless at art. I couldn't even draw a crooked line. It was a real problem for me. So, anyway. And I don't think any of you, I don't know, but there's only a few people who have that skill. Yeah. That they can paint so nicely that it looks real, that you look at it and you think, wow, you know, this is the real thing. Yeah. But then, so that takes intelligence, and we don't have that intelligence ourselves. We don't have it. But then what sort of intelligence would it take to make bodies? You know, those are just paintings of bodies. But to make actual bodies, like these very bodies we are in tonight, what intelligence would it take to make those which are living and which can reproduce and which are conscious and capable of doing so many things in life? What sort of intelligence would that take? So it's not unreasonable to connect these two things up. Actually, it's a very straightforward thing. It's extremely straightforward. Yeah, and it's a lot more it's a lot more reasonable than saying that, you know, we in our human forms and without the capacities we have, that it all just happened by accident. You know, I think it was Newton or somebody like that. You may have heard this story because Srila Prabhupada told this story. How, I think it was Newton or someone anyway, famous scientist from the past. He somehow made a working model of the universe with planets moving around and, you know, all these things. So he made that, and it was, you know, a fairly sophisticated little contrivance. Then he invited one of his friends who was an atheist. He invited him over to his house to see it. And he told his friend, come on, I've got something interesting to show you. So they went into the room, and there was this little model, and there were these planets moving around and so on. And Newton or whoever said, what do you think? And his atheist friend said, oh, it's very nice. Who made it? Really, very clever. Who made it? And Mr. Newton said, well, you wouldn't believe it, but I just walked in here the other day and it was just here. It just appeared here. No one made it. So his atheist friend said, no, the thing is a joke. No, who made it? And Newton was insisting, no, I'm serious. I just walked in here the other day and it was here. Really? So his friend got a little agitated. You know, you're trying to make a fool of me. So Newton said, well, you know, you say that this whole, the universe we're in, is just coming from nowhere. There's no God, no intelligence behind it. It's just, you know, just came out of nothing. You're ready to say that. But now this little thing, which is just a little replica, and now you're insisting that there must be a person behind it. This is not, you know, this is not rational. Yeah. So what I'm saying there is that this idea that bad things happening to good people or anything happening to anyone, that it may be happening by chance, is not a very good idea. It doesn't stand up very well to a lot of scrutiny. Yeah, it doesn't stand up well. Whereas the concept of reincarnation, even though you may not see it right in front of your face like that, but in terms of symptoms and logical, rational types of explanations and so on, actually there's a lot to be said for it. And if you take it out in certain situations, it becomes conspicuous by its absence. Yeah. And even having said that, in Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada has helped us to understand how in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna has explained that actually we have had experience of reincarnation. We have had experience in these lifetimes. This is slightly, you know, you have to think about this one a bit. But it's a very good point that Krishna makes. Dehino smanyatadehe komaram yovanam jara tatade hantara praptir diras tatran na muyati. Krishna says that as the embodied soul within this lifetime passes from childhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. But diras tatran na muyati, the dira, the sober person, spiritually conscious person, na muyati, is not bewildered by that change. Yeah. So, Krishna is saying there, he is saying that we have already been reincarnating in this lifetime. Yeah. From childhood, just like our little, there's Baladev back there. He's an example. Baladev, Haribo. He has a little body. Outside is Gorky Shaw. He has an even littler body. And then there's us, and we're at different points in our lives. And we have very different bodies. So, of course, I know you're all being devotees. Can you bring Gorky Shaw in just so we can demonstrate here? See? There's Gorky Shaw. Haribo! Gorky Shaw. You see how he has a little body, right? And you see Baladev also has a little body, but it's not so little, it's a bit bigger. And then there's us. And we got big bodies compared to that. I mean, really? Considerably bigger. So, where is our little boy, child's body gone? Or, for most of us, where have our youth bodies gone? Yeah. Where are they gone? They've gone. We lost them. And now we've got different bodies. Yes, the bones are bigger. You know, Gorky Shaw's arm bones, you know, they may be that long. You know, ours are, you know, a foot long. It's a different thing. It's not the same thing. It's a different thing. Yeah, it's a different thing. You know, Prabhupada made the point that in medical science, they say that every cell of the body changes every 7 years. So if you're, you know, for argument's sake, 29, for argument's sake, that means you are just in the early stages of your fifth body. You just finished your fourth body when you were 28. Now you're into your fifth body, like this. Yes, so reincarnation can actually be, when it's looked upon in those terms, then we can say, that actually we have direct experience of it in a very objective sense, truly objective sense, in this very lifetime. So, for these and many other reasons, but we don't want to keep you all, it's getting a bit late, we take it that reincarnation is a fact, and that other ideas, be they Darwinian evolutionary ideas, or, you know, sort of Christian or other religious ideas which don't take into account reincarnation, we consider them to be fantasy, actually. Yeah. We don't see solid reason. We don't see solid logic behind them very much. But it tends to be rather airy-fairy, actually. Yeah. Hare Krishna. Amen. Any comments or questions?
Somebody was asking this evening, why we don't, now we don't take the confession our last night, that then we continue and not commit the same thing?
Yes. Well, that's a good question, actually. How come if we had a previous lifetime or a number of previous lifetimes, we can't remember any of them? Well, you weren't here, unfortunately, earlier. We read from the Bhagavatam, Narada Muni speaking to King Prachana Barhishat about how, during the course of this life, sometimes impressions come into our minds. During the day they may, when we're dreaming, sleeping at night, they may, impressions of things we have not experienced in this life. Yes. So, these are things which we experienced in previous lives. The impression was made on the mind, it was stored in the mind. But now in this lifetime it's just coming out as some sort of vivid idea within the mind. Some of you will have heard this, my late father, one morning I remember him coming and telling me that he had a dream the night before of a pig which was flying. And he was very amused by this. And he gave it the name a piggin. So, anyway, fathers being fathers, I guess. He would regularly, for, you know, like the next few months or weeks or whatever, he would regularly bring up the piggin. And it became a little joke amongst us about the piggin. So, of course, obviously we don't have pigs that fly. But where's this coming from? Thing is that everything exists. You cannot think of something which doesn't exist. Yes, everything exists. And you cannot think of everything which does exist. And you certainly cannot think of something which doesn't exist. Yeah. So, you know, sometimes some sort of far-out idea comes into our mind. Nothing to do with this current lifetime. So according to Narada Muni, this is an impression from a previous lifetime when you did experience it. Prabhupada sometimes talks about, you may be dreaming that a tiger is chasing you. But in this lifetime, you've never had a tiger chase you. But in a previous lifetime, surely you've had a tiger chasing you. And that makes a deep impression. But only now it comes out. So therefore, we would say there is recollection. There is recollection from previous lifetimes. But of course, it tends to be somewhat incoherent. Yeah. Generally, even though there are many stories of people like through hypnotherapy being regressed or deja vu we were talking about earlier, you know, you suddenly walk into a place, suddenly, wow, wait a minute, you have that feeling that you've been there before, even though in this life you've definitely not been there before. Yeah. So these impressions are stored within the mind, but it's all because it's from some time ago. Quite a long time ago. Therefore, it's not so coherent, often, generally. It's not so clear and, you know, just like, really straightforward as most of our thinking and the ideas which come into our minds are. Srila Prabhupada was asked this question, and he made the point. He was asked, why is it that if we had a previous life, why can't we remember it? Prabhupada, his reply, he began by saying, do you remember being in your mother's womb? And the person said, no. Srila Prabhupada asked, so do you think that you were not in your mother's womb then? Obviously. And then Prabhupada said, well, if you have any doubt, go and ask your mother. So the thing is that our memories are very weak. And what to speak of our last life or even a number of lives back, what to speak of not being very much able to remember that in a coherent fashion. But even if you go back to your childhood, you know, like preschool days or even, you know, so much of our lives actually, we cannot really coherently remember them. Can you remember your first birthday party? Or second? Or the earliest thing I can remember was when my mother had my younger brother, gave birth to him that day. And my aunt, my mother's sister, came running over to me and told me that my mother had to go to the hospital. It was a bit of a flap, and she was just about to give birth. I can remember that. That's the first memory of anything that I have in this lifetime. And then from then to when I remember my first day in school. But other things, you know, it's hardly there. It's hardly there. So our memories are very weak at the best of times. And, you know, what to speak of your previous lifetime. Therefore, it's not surprising that if anything comes through, it's kind of vague or not so clear. And therefore people may be in doubt about it. But Narada Muni is explaining here that actually these things are coming from previous lifetimes. They have to come from somewhere. They can't come from nowhere. Yeah. They're coming from somewhere. And that must mean, can only mean a previous life. If it's something which has nothing to do with what you've been through in this life. Is that okay?
In some writers, fantasy writers, when they write about goblins and leprechauns and everything like that, is that because they at one stage they actually existed?
What do you mean that they at one stage existed?
Well,
haven't you met any of the little people?
No,
you wouldn't make a good Irishman. Yeah. There, one writer, Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, was telling me, you probably remember him, he came here once. I hope he's coming back again also. He said, he's a very highly literate and well-read person. He said that one famous philosopher, Western philosopher, said that in the days when humans were more divine, the gods were more human. Yeah. Means there was actual like communication and interaction. Yeah. Between human beings and other living beings like human type, godly or fairy type or whatever, you know, sort of mystical type beings. Yeah. I thought it was a very nice thing. In the days when humans were more divine, the gods were more human. Yeah. So the thing is that our consciousness has become degraded due to this materialistic technological society and all that. So our sensitivity to these other, you know, like to certain aspects, like more subtle, mystical and more refined aspects of life, our sensitivity to those things, our capacity to be aware of those things has been lost. To a very large extent. Yeah. Because, you know, in certain in practically all cultures, if you go back 500 years, in all cultures it's full of you know, fairies and elves and demigods and angels and, you know, it's full of it. In fact, a very, very large part of their cultures, the literature, the art, the music, the dance, large, large parts of these things are focused on these types of things. Yeah. But now, you know, it's all hard materialism. So we've lost that sensitivity of consciousness. We've become degraded. Therefore, we're less sensitive. Kill the animals, don't care about them. Yeah. We've lost sensitivity. Kill the environment, don't worry about it. You know, make the most of it because we'll die and then, you know, let the next generation worry about it. Something like that. Yeah.